97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
I'm Ryan Recker filling in for Mark Reardon. Happy to be here with you today. Got another hour we're going to spend together. And if you want to find us online, make sure to like 97.1 FM Talk on Facebook, Twitter. You can find me on there as well, Ryan Recker Radio, Facebook or Twitter. A couple of different spots you can do that. Joining us now, White House correspondent for the Washington Times, Jeff Murdoch. Thank you for coming on today.
Thanks for having me, Ryan. Really appreciate it.
So you're in that White House room. Is it tense? Sometimes we see the videos, and I'm just curious, what's the atmosphere like being in there lately?
The atmosphere, I wouldn't call it tense. There's been some moments. There almost seems to be a sort of a last day of school feeling that, you know, this administration is counting down the days until they don't have to deal with us anymore. And you see that. Their number of guests in the White House briefing room have increased. The time it takes for them to answer our questions in there isn't what it used to be. There's more. We've had more guests lately. It just seems like everybody's just wanting to move on to whichever administration is the next administration.
Do you think that any journalist in that room, they're satisfied with the answers they're getting, or is pretty much everyone getting non-answers?
Well, everybody's pretty much getting non-answers. That's been a consistent problem, and that's not anything that has changed since President Biden dropped out of the race. They've consistently avoided our questions. And a great example of this is today, the White House Correspondents Association, which rarely will criticize this administration, came out. The president is having the Quad meeting in Wilmington, Delaware. He's having these world leaders at his house. Do you know that they have banned the press from being in his house? So there's no press reporting on what's happening at these meetings. As of this afternoon, the only thing that the press is allowed to do is watch these world leaders pull up to the driveway at Biden's house in Delaware.
Let me ask this. I mean, how long have you been covering the White House?
3 years.
Okay. Well, I guess maybe you would know this or probably not if you haven't experienced it yourself. But let's say going back to the Trump administration at Mar-a-Lago, I think press were allowed in there, weren't they? I mean, they were encouraged to come in and witness when there was a host of a world leader.
That's correct. They wanted it on the record. I mean, there's some moments of history here that's not going to be captured. And we're just going to have to rely on what the White House says so unless they change their view and change their attitude. And what's interesting is the WHCA is loath to criticize this administration. Today's rebuke is the second time in a couple of months they've done that. I don't know if you remember back in June when President Biden was still in the race, he was complaining that reporters were asking questions that diverged from agreed upon topics. He was giving a speech on the economy. Somebody would ask him an abortion question. He snapped at a couple of reporters for doing that. And when that happened, they issued a warning to, or not a warning, but they issued a scolding, I'll say, to him for doing that. But you don't see it that often, given this administration's disdain for the press. And it's interesting to me because all they do is talk about how much they have the freedom of press. They like to tout, for example, that they have, you know, briefings every day. The Trump administration didn't have briefings every day. But but they don't say anything in those briefings. You know, Karine doesn't go beyond the third row when it comes to calling on people for a lot of these briefings. We have guests come in to eat up time. So it's a lot of lip service, but they're really not doing any more they're doing less in press access than the Trump administration.
Yeah, I remember, and stop me if I'm getting this one wrong, wasn't it the Nixon administration that actually stopped doing these and they eventually kicked them out of the White House? They were doing them across the street or something. And you see this sort of disdain in other presidents and the way they've handled it. I wanted to point this out, too, the differences between Biden and Trump when it comes to their handling of the press. I remember a time when Donald Trump would show up to these press briefings and he would answer, an hour's worth of questions. I can't recall Joe Biden in 4 years answering a total of, you know, a half hour of questions, if that, in that briefing room. And the other side of it is, I think there was a time when Donald Trump was meeting with Putin, and the criticism was that needs to be on the record because we don't trust you. That's why there needs to be someone there to know what is said. And here we are today hosting world leaders. There's also criticisms that Joe Biden does not log guests that come into his house when they should be logged. But we're having the same issue where they're having these conversations, but the criticism's just not there for the Biden administration. So when you're watching these sort of things, does that play a factor in how you're covering this? You understand that your same colleagues didn't have a problem criticizing Trump, but now they're being quiet when it comes to the criticisms of Joe Biden?
Well, it's true. There's definitely hypocrisy there. And one of the things that's worth pointing out is that one of the reasons why the Trump administration did not do as many press conferences, or press briefings, I mean, is because when President Trump met with the media, he would take their questions. I mean, he would sit there and take their questions for a long time. President Biden doesn't do that. These are carefully scripted events. They rush him in and out. One of the things I find really interesting is he takes more questions now than he did when he was still in the race. Mm-hmm. There's way more press gaggles, which still doesn't really make up for it, than he was when he was in the race. And I think that's really interesting. But the White House, the Trump administration did not need to do these briefings because the president was out there answering these questions. And that's why the Biden administration is doing it. It's a substitute for him talking to us.
Okay, so this is going to sound kind of like a cheap shot, but I'm just curious because, you know, you're in the room. And I'm going to ask this one question as a precursor to the second question. How is your hearing? Do you have good hearing?
Yes, I have very good hearing.
Okay. Have you ever heard Joe Biden at a time speak and you can't understand what he's saying? Because there's a lot of times he's criticized where he mumbles or doesn't answer correct or straightforward, and there's people trying to guess what he's trying to get out. Do you have that issue in person?
Yes, I do. There's times where he's talked low. There's other times where they put him, and I'll give you an example, where they put him in situations that make it difficult for you to hear. Now, I don't know if that's I doubt that's intentional. I'm sure it's just poorly thought out. But I'll give you an example. Is I was traveling with the president to with the other reporters. We traveled with him to San Francisco earlier this year, and he met with the widow of the Putin critic who died. And they wanted to have him come and talk to us about the meeting and what happened. We're all staying in this nice hotel in San Francisco. For whatever reason, they decided to do this in the basement of the parking garage. And you can hear, as the president's trying to talk, wheels screech above. And you can find this on YouTube. I mean, it's not. You hear wheels screeching above you. You hear people honking at each other. We heard a driver curse out another driver because they cut him off. And this is while he's trying to do this. I don't know who's decision it was to do that, but that happens a lot where he's trying to talk to us and you have Marine One's blades whirling behind you or the motor of Air Force One, and it makes it even harder for him to hear because he talks lower, and then you have these sounds, these very loud sounds competing with him. I don't know if you ever read pull reports, but the pull reports are from the reporters who were traveling with the president. They send out what their interactions were. You know, we asked the president this, he said that, or president didn't take questions. And there's so many pull reports now where you can't really use them because it's president said we need to inaudible, then we need to inaudible, or flat out, we just didn't hear what the president said.
Yeah. Can I play a clip from you from one of the White House press briefings and get your reaction to...
Sure.
Okay, so this is clip number 17, Fox News with Ducey. Question. This is a follow-up question from him. Let's play that real quick if we could.
There are mentally unstable people who are attempting to kill political candidates, attempting to kill Donald Trump, and they are still hearing this White House refer to him as a threat. Is there no concern that people are taking that literally?
We're using examples. We're not just saying that just to say it. January 6th, Peter. January 6th. Wait, January 6th. How many times do we have to? January 6th, 2021. That is a fact. I know your focus has to be on this side of the house. It can't be on your side of the house. I get that. But we also have to be careful on how you're asking me these questions.
Okay, so this is what I wanted to ask you. First, were you in the room for that one?
Yes, I was.
Okay. As a journalist, you're watching this go down. What's going through your mind?
Well, my first thought was that she kept saying examples, but she only had one. Mm-hmm. She kept saying, we've got all these examples, and then she just keeps repeating January 6th. The other thing is that she's indignant over the fact that she's being asked this question, which happens quite a bit, that they really don't like certain questions, and they get very indignant when you ask or you challenge them on certain things. And this is an example of that, that instead of asking the question or coming back with an intelligent response, she just gets indignant about it.
Yeah. Jeff Murdoch, White House correspondent for The Washington Times. And I look at this, too, in some of these different interactions we've seen. There was a point, I think, during the Trump administration where it was entertaining. You'd watch this and you would see the president of the United States spar with members of the journalist pool that was there. You looked at it and you said it's almost entertaining. And today you look at it as something else. You almost look at it as going through the motions where nothing is ever accomplished with it. And you get this feeling that this administration is so separated from the American people, when you got this feeling that, at least previously speaking, there was one that wanted to engage at any given opportunity with the American people. So as you see this, is that a fair assessment? You're basically covering an administration that wants to separate itself from the American people as much as possible?
Well, yes, because and we're starting to see this now with the Harris campaign as well. You're 100% right, but look how walled off she is from the press. One of the things that fascinated me is her longest interview so far was with the National Association of Black Journalists. One of the questions they asked her is, why is joy important to you? Mm-hmm. These are the kind of interviews she's picking. These are the kind of interviews she's doing, and we're not learning anything from any of that. And I understand that's the point, but yeah, the American people lose something with that.
I mean, have you thought about it? This is, you know, people have their shower thoughts where they like go through conversations and arguments in their head, like when they're alone in the shower or something like that. But have you considered, if you had to sit down with Vice President Kamala Harris, what you would ask her? And if you have, what would you ask her?
Well, the first thing I would ask her is, I want more information, you know, about her changes on policies, her change in we haven't gotten an adequate example why suddenly she's for fracking. We haven't gotten an adequate example over her flip flop on decriminalization of illegal immigrants. My values haven't changed is not an answer to that question. And when people ask that question, she spouts out her my values haven't changed, and nobody ever follows up. But we need to know what is the rationale, because there is the rationale. She's running for office, and she knows these policies are unpopular. And she's got to be pressed on that.
Yeah, I think the rationale with fracking is Pennsylvania is the answer for that one.
Exactly, but we need something – exactly, but – and she's not going to admit that, but at the same time, there's a better answer than my values have changed, because my values haven't changed, but this is stuff you valued. So how can you say those two? It's a follow-up nobody's asked.
Right. It's got to be hard for you. You know, this is your job, and it's a bunch of non-answers in a row over and over and over. It's got to make your job hard, doesn't it?
Well, I'll tell you one way it makes it easy is whenever there's news at the briefing, then I always have to write up a bunch of stories about what was said. Since there's no news, then I don't really have to write that much up from it. But no, it is hard because you want to give the American people answers. You owe the American people answers. It's your job to give the American people answers, and you're just stonewalled.
You know, and you have that drive. You want to be able to provide that for people because it's important. And you would think, wow, don't they need that same drive in office to try to do that? But instead, it's not about trying to inform these people, let them know what's going on. It's about, I need to craft a very particular message so I give them this impression. And it's so much different than the truth of what a journalist would put out there in a situation like that. And then you don't give an opportunity to the press to try to press you or give you any pushback. It's so disingenuous. And to me, it would drive me nuts if I was trying to cover this on a day-to-day basis. By the way, people wanted to look you up online, where can they go?
Well, can I? Let me just answer a question. Let me just respond to it real quick. One of the things I find very frustrating about this administration, not only stonewalled in the briefing room, if you go up, there's a thing called upper press where Karine's office is. You go up there to try and ask her a question before the briefing, you're told she does not meet with reporters before the briefing. You go after the briefing, she's perpetually in an after-briefing debrief, so it's a briefing about the briefing. So there's no time to go into her office and talk to her and get the answers you need. Jen Psaki always had her door open. Karine does not, and it's very hard. So you're not only you're stonewalled in the briefing, you're stonewalled if you try other methods to get that. People can find me at Washington Times, and then I'm on Twitter at Jeff Mordock, M-O-R-D-O-C-K.
Jeff Mordock, thank you so much for joining us. And I got to say, it's very insightful, the things that you can bring to us here in St. Louis. We don't get to experience this firsthand. Sometimes we only see the clips, the curated clips online. So to get behind the scenes and understand how it goes, I truly enjoy it. And I know a lot of people here enjoy it, too. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Ryan. I greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
Jeff Mordock, White House correspondent for The Washington Times, joining us here on 97.1 FM Talk. When we come back from the break, a heritage scholar specializing in cybersecurity, Steve Bucci, is joining us. Don't go anywhere. 97.1 FM Talk. And I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. Wow, these hours, they go by so fast. We only have a half hour left. Joining us now, a heritage scholar specializing in cybersecurity in military special operations, Steve Bucci. Thank you so much for coming on to 97.1 in St. Louis.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
What a wild story. Pagers exploding. Now walkie-talkies exploding. So I think everyone kind of hears these headlines. Some people have gone a little bit further, watched some surveillance video of these things being detonated. What do we know so far about what's going on with this?
Well, this started because the Israelis were tracking Hezbollah's leadership in particular on their cell phones. So a while back, the Hezbollah leadership said, we're going to stop using cell phones. And they ordered a couple of thousand pagers that were manufactured in Taiwan, I believe, someplace in Asia. Except the Israelis heard about it, intercepted the shipment, and injected a substance called PETIN, which is an acronym for an explosive compound, also put in a detonating device, and then they sent them on to Hezbollah. So these are not pagers that people just bought in a store or that anybody else was using. They were pagers specifically bought by Hezbollah and distributed only to their personnel or the people that supported them, like the Iranian ambassador to Lebanon, some Iranian IRGC Quds Force commandos living in Syria, and you know, a couple of thousand of their own folks. And then I've heard two stories. I'm not sure which one is accurate. But one, they said the Israelis just decided it was time to sort of defang Hezbollah in a very big way. And the other story was that the Hezbollah people had started to figure out that there was something fishy about these devices. And the Israelis decided, okay, before they look into it and figure out that they're dangerous and stop using them, we're just going to execute the operation and detonated them. And that was the first day, and they blew up several thousand of these devices, killing some of their operators and maiming several others. Lost hands, lost ears, lost eyesight, lost some of their more sensitive parts if they were carrying a device in their front pocket. And then in subsequent days, other devices now have gone off. They switched a bunch of people to, you know, walkie-talkie style radios, but apparently they had gotten to those too. And some of those have gone off in the last couple of days. Very precise, very significant. And, you know, everybody that's saying, oh, this is terrible, it's inhumane, you know, they killed lots of innocent people. There was some collateral damage, but we're talking in numbers like less than 10. like two or three innocent people were killed, and they were too close to the device when the operator was taken out, and some others were wounded. But about 98 to 99% of the casualties were hardcore Hezbollah operatives or the leadership above them, with some of their international trainers and suppliers got it too, because they had those devices also.
Right. So it's good to note. See, I always said Hezbollah, but I guess people pronounce it different ways and you do it more specifically. They're a terrorist organization. They've been recognized as a terrorist organization for over 20 years. Countries all over the world recognize them. It's not just the United States, as terrorist organizations. So we're talking about equipment used by terrorists to conduct terrorist operations. So I think that needs to be put into perspective. The other thing I was going to mention is that sometimes this is what I worry about. I'm not worried about a terrorist getting blown up. That doesn't bother me whatsoever. I'm worried that someone on that side is going to get the bright idea, wow, we can sell Americans a bunch of these things too as like payback. So should we be worried about, you know, buying stuff on Temu or Alibaba, you know, these foreign websites, that what's going to be shipped to us could be something like this?
We haven't had any incidents like that happen. I personally, and this is my cyber hat on, I do not buy electronics directly from Chinese vendors or other people in Asia, because frankly, they're usually just loaded with malware that can then transfer to your other devices, to your computers, that sort of thing. Somebody else could do this exact same thing with explosives. You know, China really hasn't seen a tendency to do that. And if you're buying your electronics from Lebanon, you're probably not being very bright.
I want to say United States did something similar with cell phones. They essentially planted these cell phones with criminals, and they use it basically full of malware. So they were able to get all their private messaging, and they were using that as part of their investigation. I want to say the FBI did something like that a couple of years ago. So they weren't blowing up these devices, but they were, you know, doing something similar in a way to gain some intel from people that are, you know, out there to do harm to other innocent Americans. So I guess the idea has been out there for a little bit. You know, real quick, can I play a clip for you from Tom Cotton? He reacted to this, and I wanted to get your reaction to it too. Tyler, if you can do clip number 6.
How do you think Hezbollah operatives feel right now about using their cell phone or their laptop or turning on their car ignition or even using the toaster or the coffee maker or the refrigerator? Of course, these explosions are going to wreak havoc inside of Hezbollah.
Okay, so collateral damage. Now they're afraid to use these devices they would normally be using. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, he's spot on. You know, in this kind of operation where it's that precisely directed at the bad guys, in this case Hezbollah, it's a huge psychological operation as well as a physical operation to take some of those fighters out or to wound them enough so that maybe they decide to go into a different business. Those folks, you know, their wives, everybody else, are probably having a discussion right now to say, you need to go change your profession, buddy, because we're all at risk if something else happens. Or at the very least, these guys, instead of thinking they could communicate with one another without any potential blowback, literally, they're going to think twice about doing any of these operations. And if you can cripple their ability to communicate, either by taking out the equipment or so discouraging the individuals from using them that they don't, you've accomplished a heck of a lot at stopping your enemy from being terribly effective.
Yeah, Stephen Bucci, heritage scholar specializing in cybersecurity and military special operations. So you kind of know the way this organization thinks. When something like this happens, do they become more emboldened? Like now they have a goal, they have to get retaliation. Or do you think actually some of them may rethink their position and realize they are mortal and they will die if they continue down this path? What do you think is more likely to happen? More extremists or some of them stepping away?
Well, at least some of them will be furious and will be more extremist. Remember, these guys don't all go out and blow themselves up every day. A lot of them, particularly as they go up in the organization, are not the people who are giving their life for Allah. They are convincing other people to do it. So some of those low-ranking foot soldiers may get sent out to do things with a renewed fervency for the theology of, you know, let's become a martyr. But a lot of the others are going to go, I really don't want to do that. I think I'm going to go sell pistachios or immigrate to another country and become a cab driver. I don't know. But they're going to get out of the terrorist business. And that's kind of the goal of an operation like this. It's not to kill everybody that's in Hezbollah. They just want them to stop being terrorists and targeting the Israeli people.
Wow, the way you mentioned and the way you discussed that they're out there recruiting and getting people underneath them to do action, it sounds like a terrorist pyramid scheme, the worst kind of multi-level marketing possible, recruiting people to a terrorist organization, and then you encouraging and forcing them to go out and commit, you know, murder or suicide bombings, things like that. What a terrible recruiting job that would have to be. By the way, if people wanted to see some of your work in Heritage, where can they go and find that?
They can go to heritage.org. Everything that Heritage writes, all their research, all of their documents are available for free download if you want them. We just want to put good information in people's hands so that they can read it, study it, and make their own decisions on which policies to support and which ones to recognize are not effective. And so that stuff's all available to them.
Yeah, here in the United States, I don't think we have walkie-talkies and cell phones that explode. They just threaten you with dirty laundry, essentially. Like they tell you, we're going to release this information unless you do with what we say. They have different ways of threatening you here. But now, I don't think that most people even considered this as an option. But I'm guessing in the world of espionage, in the world of like James Bond, where there's these gadgets that can do things like this, there's probably even crazier things out there that are in use right now.
There are, you know, this kind of technological innovation, if you will, in warfare goes on constantly. There's very, very bright, very capable people who can do things with these kind of digital devices directly through the internet connections. Or others, like this one, they have to physically have the device, put the stuff in it to make it explode. It's two different types of tradecraft. One is the actual, you know, hacking of the digital device. The other is referred to as a supply chain attack, where they get the device somewhere in its movement or manufacturing points and do some alterations, if you will, to make it do what you want it to do to your adversary at the other end. There is no limit to this stuff other than the imagination of the people doing it. And, given that this is now, you know, boldly out in the open, there'll probably be other people trying it. The good guys, we tend to look for this stuff. We try and protect our supply chain. But the Israelis are fighting for their lives, and they, in self-defense, there's not too much that's out of the realm of what's doable.
Yeah. Something else I don't think anyone's brought up. I think about us here in the United States, and I go to places and I can't get a cell phone reception. How does Lebanon have such good reception that they can simultaneously just have all of these attacks happen? And it doesn't seem like any of them missed. I'm guessing most of them went off, as far as we can tell. They must have, being able to transmit a signal that can be reached by so many different people at the same time is as equally impressive that they were able to carry out this to begin with.
Well, it's interesting because pagers don't operate exactly like a cell phone. That's why Hezbollah thought they would be safer by using the pagers, because it goes, you know, if you want to contact somebody on a pager, you dial a number, it goes to a transmitter and then goes out over the telephone signal to the devices. So it's a little different technology. It's an older technology than 5G cell phone coverage like we have here in most places. And it allows that. It makes it more reliable, but you can't do as much with it. But in this case, because of the alterations they put in, they were able to dial one number that dialed every one of those pagers at the same time and caused them all to go off. So it's, wow, some of it's kind of tricky technology, but it's built on an older technology backbone, and that additional reliability made this really a spectacular effect to have all those explosions go near simultaneously.
Imagine if that number got out there. that's amazing. Or someone dialed the wrong number accidentally one time. We've seen things like that happen. It's a spam call and something like that. Okay, Stephen Bucci, by the way, again, you mentioned it before. If people wanted to look up your work, where can they go?
They can go to heritage.org. I'm on X as S Bucci, S-B-U-C-C-I. So they can see what I do personally there. My buddies there at Heritage, they're covering a lot of subjects in a lot of depth, and I highly recommend people go there and check it out.
Stephen Bucci, Heritage Scholar specializing in cybersecurity and military special operations. Thanks for joining us here in St. Louis. Appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
We only have one more segment left. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. The cut of the day coming up on 97.1 FM Talk. And I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. Had fun this show. I don't know if Sue's still there because...
I'm here.
And I'll model some jeans for you. I'll have my wife take photos.
Okay.
And
no.
You can get it from all angles.
Not,
so you can see what
all what I
sweatpants
said.
Sweatpants jeans look
nope,
like.
Nope. What I said was put them out on the... I just don't understand. Put them on the bed and they're... It sounds to me, Ryan, like they are slip-on jeans with like a waist that has elastic.
Yes, it has elastic waist.
Oh, my gosh.
It has a drawstring so you can tighten it up so they don't fall down. We don't want them sagging.
Yeah.
And
no.
On the inside, it feels like sweatpants. On the outside, it looks like jeans. I first was introduced to this probably 13, 14, 15 years ago. You know who wore them?
No.
So I did an event in Ohio. We had a local contestant on the show, So You Think You Can Dance. And very popular Fox show for there. It was early on. And the person that was from our local town got the runner-up. So he came back, did a reunion show for everyone in this small town, and he brought back some of the other contestants that were popular on the show. They all wore jean sweatpants because they said it was more comfortable and easier for them to dance on stage to.
Well,
and ever since then, I've been sold.
Okay. They are dancing on stage. You are sitting in a chair.
I do move a lot in the chair, to be fair. Uh-huh. I'm always wiggling. All right, let's do the clip of the day. Cut of the day.
Playback ready. Now, the audio cut of the day.
So there was this incident in Miami where a car thief got caught red-handed because they were stuck in the car. This is fantastic. We got two clips here. Let's start with clip four.
Yeah, I thought it was a joke. And as I'm walking towards my car, all of a sudden, it seems like someone was like hiding in the car, and then they just popped up. You know, I was terrified.
Surprise. So he's got a Corvette. You know, I'm not a fancy car driver, so you're not going to find me behind the wheel of a Corvette. If someone breaks into my car, it's going to be pretty easy. Like, you know, they're not going to look at that and they're going to say, no, thanks, I'll pass. Like, there's going to be other cars down the street.
Thieves do not target people who wear sweatpant jeans.
No, they don't. I mean, they'll look at my car. There's rust holes in the car. you know, they'll look at the tires. They'll say, we're going to pass on this one. It's more of an inconvenience for us to steal this.
He's got nothing in there.
You get no value. But now if you're in a parking garage and you see a brand new Corvette, that thing looks sweet. So it's a little bit tempting for them. They get in and they get stuck. So the owner is filming this like, you're not going to believe this guy. Look at him. He's in my Corvette. Let's play clip number 5.
Why are you in my car? No, you can't get out because we calling the cops. What do you mean for what? This is Grand Theft Auto.
He gets
that guy stuck.
Says, help me out of your car. I'm trying to steal. I'm honest. Really, the person that found him, he is lucky. This guy didn't come up and beat him up while he was behind the wheel. Get a couple of shots to his face, break his nose or something. Mm. Probably didn't want to get blood on the inside of the car.
That's a good point.
Cops show up. They get the guy out. He's arrested. It's a pretty open and shut kind of case there. So you ever heard of people that had cars stolen? They feel so violated by all of this. Like they get their car back and they're like, something feels off.
Well, yeah.
By it. Do you think this guy probably doesn't feel that way? He probably feels like this car I'm going to own forever. Like me and you are in it together, Corvette.
Yeah. Plus, you know, exactly. He knows that the guy was unable to go anywhere. I think part of the weirdness of having your car stolen is you don't know where it's been. You don't know who's in it. This guy knows everything.
Exactly. So the criminals today, though, they probably look at that and say, I'll probably get a slap on the wrist. Like,
frustrating.
No big deal. It is so frustrating. And you ever see cars parked on the street in San Francisco or Los Angeles? I remember there's a famous story about this with Seth Rogen, the actor, who said, you shouldn't be complaining about people busting your windows. I've had it like 5 times happen. Ha, 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 ha. And he says that, hey, these poor people are just trying to scavenge some things together because they're so poor and they live on the street. Why hassle these type of guys that are out there breaking these? Like it was looked at as you complaining about the car thefts. You were the problem complaining. It's just so bad right now. I think there should be a law that if you catch someone trying to steal your car in an instant like this, once they get out, you're allowed 3 whacks anywhere on the body to the person. Like if you catch them red-handed like this without repercussion, you should be able to just like is it Singapore? They do the caning. I feel like you should get like a public caning for this.
Wow. It would definitely be a deterrent.
Maybe.
Or somebody would steal my car and I can't really punch. So
yeah, I know. So that's why they would stop stealing like F-150s. Construction workers.
Right.
I can't afford to get a couple of whacks after this one. Sue, it was so fun working with you today. Looking forward to doing it again tomorrow.
Me too.
I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.